This is the Future of Water, where we talk about all the ways in which companies, utilities, and people are addressing the challenges and opportunities in water. Today, we're going to talk with Bluefield analyst Kellen Mitchell about drought, Taiwan, semiconductors, and what all that means for global supply chains. But before we do that, let's jump into the news. When I initially laid out some items with our research team to discuss this week on the Future Water podcast, which hopefully you're already subscribed to, one other big news item superseded all of them. And that really is the new infrastructure plan laid out by the Biden administration. Well, as expected, somewhat, it put forth its infrastructure plan, and it was not a small one. In fact, it's still early, and it's still big. But what the plan does is it reaffirms much of what we had already been considering at Bluefield. So, simply put, $111 billion is not chump change for the water sector. I know some people are already complaining that it's not enough. It will never be enough. I promise you that. But what I will say is that if you think more broadly, the water sector benefits from other dollars that are not specifically underwater infrastructure. I'll get into that in a second. But the most notable part of the plan does address the one thing that everybody's been talking about for a long time, and that is the large number of lead service lines. As I mentioned, I believe on the Water Values podcast, there's a plug for you to subscribe to. The Water Values podcast with Dave McGimsey is one of the best out there, particularly on water. But the question that I raised with him was, who's going to pay for the replacement of all these lines? Because as we've discussed, they really don't fall into the specific, I'd say, network purview, if that's using the word correctly, of the water utility. It really falls on the homeowner's property, but there's inequities already in place, as have been discussed. So what this really does is puts dollars to addressing all of it. Well, once and for all, it'd be nice to deal with this major water quality problem that we've all known about for a long time. But, you know, to put it in perspective, Bluefield released a report on sizing the lead service line replacement market a year and a half ago. And what we looked at were the states most impacted, the policies in place, but also just sizing the market. Really, what was the thing for the vendors? What was the or is the opportunity? And it's not a small task to do so. There's, you know, a lot of uncertainty about where they are, what they are. And there are companies out there that are helping identify them. So there's a lot of interesting activity happening. But size of the market is about, you know, there's an estimated 6.1 million full or partial lead service lines across community water systems in the U.S., serving between 15 to 22 million people. So a lot of people. The cost to replace these lines is estimated to surpass $32 billion, according to Bluefield Research. Big dollars, right? So it takes a lot. And that's why there's been a big concern. You can't just dump this on the homeowners, because it does cost thousands of dollars to replace each one in many cases. So it all adds up. But I think the other benefit to all of this is that while we're talking about lead and also in this case, water quality, this is going to put further emphasis on how do we deal with contaminants of emerging concern. It just brings water quality to the forefront of the conversation. I mean, this is public health we're talking about, and we've seen it in a number of different cities, but it's more pervasive than I think we all realize. So that's sort of what's garnering the most attention. So why else am I optimistic? Well, actually, I'm optimistic, if not excited, about other transformational investments in the plan. So let's start with a kickstart to the power sectors. What does this mean for water, right? Everybody, no one's talking about the water aspect of this, but there is. Water does play an important part of this equation. Incentives to accelerate fuel switching, including moving away from coal. Well, why should the water sector care? New greenfield build out of new power plants, some of which are going to require advanced water treatment, design, management of those water supplies, but also discharges. So that's an opportunity. So the switch is we're going to go from things like coal to gas, to battery storage, as well as hydrogen potentially down the road. So there's growing, emerging opportunities for change investment that also includes the water players, both vendors, could include project finance, and so on and so forth. Secondly, decommissioning of coal plants and ash ponds, they're going to require cleanups, right? So there are approximately 1,227 coal ash ponds across 321 storage facilities in the U.S. Well, 95% of these are, in fact, in 20 states, but they're going to have to be dewatered. They're going to have to be treated. You just can't just drain them into the river. So that's an opportunity for companies that are already out there trying to tackle it. Will it accelerate? Hopefully so, because this has been an ongoing discussion about how to deal with this, and there's been pushback at the state and local levels. So that's the power sector piece. Transportation, whether it be for electric vehicles, roads, or airplanes, or airports is a better way to put it. The water sector is also going to benefit. The electric vehicle supply chain, it requires, you know, things like rare earth metals, which in the mining sector requires a lot of water. So when we're looking for lithium for batteries, that water is going to have to be managed both in supply, but also treatment, reuse, as well as discharge. I mean, in fact, you know, and then you start looking at the manufacturing process or the facilities themselves. I mean, Bluefield just released some analysis, not only on the full auto sector, but also more specifically, a separate research note on H2O Innovations water treatment agreement with Tesla in Texas. The auto, you know, Tesla has it's not only its own patent for water wastewater treatment and its own goals to drive down its own water usage, but there are opportunities for that as the electric vehicle supply chain and facilities are built out once again, focusing on greenfield again. It's probably not going to all happen in Detroit or in Germany. It's going to happen all over the place. So they're going to have to look at water. What are their water supplies? Where are they discharging? So once again, another opportunity. New roads. So there's a big part of this is going to transportation. And I know people will complain about all the money or so much money is going to transportation or to roads. Well, admittedly, you know, it's, you know, water is out of sight, out of mind. Everybody sees the roads, they see the bridges, but all of these are going to require things like pipes, culverts, catch basins, all for stormwater management. Stormwater management and concerns about it and climate are a big issue these days. No, it ain't sexy, but I can tell you the number of companies coming to Bluefield looking for insights and data on this segment or these individual product segments is growing, you know, by the week. So climate change is real, even outside of Texas and California. Transportation is ultimately an opportunity for the water sector as well. It may not be direct, but I'm going to tell you, there are going to be dollars to be made there. And lastly, when it comes to transportation, this may be a little bit, a little esoteric, but a while back, Bluefield did some analysis on water management and reuse at airports. Okay. It's a market. These facilities, they require cooling, they require irrigation, they require water for car facilities. They got to wash cars, deal with, you know, all the properties. So it doesn't seem like a lot, but they all need it. And oftentimes, airports are owned and operated either by city or state agencies. And so there are opportunities if they are, in fact, upgraded and modernized, if you will. There are opportunities to not only tie water supplies to treated wastewater for reuse to the city, which is, you know, owns the land all around it. They own a nearby facility. But it's also an opportunity for advanced treatment and just become more efficient across the board. So there are going to be dollars there that are spent, maybe not directly for a big gold-plated desal plant, but, you know, depending on where you are in the water industry value chain, there's an opportunity there. It ain't all sexy, but, you know, water is not always sexy. It's hard to always sell the gold-plated plants. So that's a long take, but I woke up this morning on the right side of the bed. So I am, you know, in a nutshell, I'm cautiously optimistic about what's happening in the news, which is quite honestly better than I felt in a long time. sure, it's going to be expensive. There's going to be pushback. The watching the sausage being made is not going to be pretty. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think, you know, everybody talks about modernizing the U.S. infrastructure as a whole. But I think we need to get back to baseline. That's my concern. I think I put out something just the other day that I think over the last 50 years, so I think since 1976, which is when in the water sector, municipal water sector, capital and operating investments shares of total expenditures was 50%, 50%, 50-50. Today, operating is 66% of the total, which is a signal that we're kind of keep pouring good money after bad. There's a point when everybody owns a car. You say, oh my God, I've continued to pour thousands and thousands of dollars into this thing to keep it running and on the road every year. But there's a point where everybody throws in the towel and says, I just need to go get a new car. Well, I think the U.S. water infrastructure as a whole is kind of at that point. And it's going to take money. It's going to take time. It's going to take capital. But also, there are new technologies out there that can help address the problem more efficiently. But that's for another day, another discussion. So with that being said, I recommend that everybody subscribe to the Waterline newsletter. It goes out every Wednesday from Bluefield Research. We provide news, what our team of analysts are thinking, or at least think that's interesting to you. We provide data, chart of the month, data insights, also just other ongoings of Bluefield and what's happening in the water sector. So including announcements about new podcasts, special podcasts, but also the Water Values podcast. So Future Water, could always subscribe to that as well. But Waterline, it's easy. Just go to our website. You can sign up real quickly. So let's put an end to it there. And let's jump into conversation with Bluefield Research Analyst Cullen Mitchell to talk about what's happening in other parts of the world. All right. So I'm joined here today with Cullen Mitchell. Cullen is an analyst at Bluefield Research and had some good insights to share as we were looking at industrial supply chains, climate, and so on. So Cullen, how's it going?
Pretty good, Reese. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is good. I'm glad we could catch up. So let's sort of cut to the chase, Cullen. There's been a lot of news about supply chains, semiconductors, and now it seems like there's a drought in Taiwan. I don't know if everybody's really even thinking about it or considering it, given that Suez Canal has been blocked up for the better part of a week and that Europeans have not been able to get their instant coffee, which I read about, which seems kind of crazy to me that people are still drinking instant coffee, but hey, it is what it is. So let's jump into it with Taiwan. So Cullen, give me a little bit of background about what is happening and sort of why you've been looking at this for research.
Yeah, so Taiwan is a really interesting case of kind of the intersection of climate and water and supply chains. So Taiwan has been facing its worst drought in over 50 years. So parts of the island saw rainfall over the last 6 months that was 49 to 79% lower than the 20-year average. And so the governing body, the Water Resources Agency, has responded to that shortage with suspending water service for 2 days a week. Starting April 6th. This is expected that it will reduce water consumption in those affected municipalities by 15%. But then there are a lot of industrial parks that are connected to groundwater, which wouldn't be affected by that shutoff, and they're requiring those also to reduce their water consumption by 15%. And that includes a lot of big players in the semiconductor industry. So Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, or TSMC, and Micron Technology. And Taiwan is huge for the semiconductor industry. So they're responsible for about 22% of the global chip supply, followed close behind them by South Korea, which is also 21%. So a disruption to Taiwan's semiconductor manufacturing really, you know, would affect that whole industry and all these other industries that are really dependent on this technology.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing. I know that we are, you know, there's drought, climate, freeze out happening all over the world. At any given time. But this is something that I don't think a lot of people sit around thinking about drought and then say, oh, Taiwan. But one, this isn't the first time this has happened. I think, you know, they've had these problems in the past. So you're sort of leading me into the question is about, you know, well, I guess let's talk drought first. How did this all begin? Where did it start?
Yeah, so this problem really kind of has a couple angles to it. So the water shortage element really comes from there weren't any typhoons that made landfall in Taiwan in 2020, which was the first time that had happened in over half a century. And that might sound good to you, you know, like no hurricanes hitting somewhere sounds positive, but those storms really fill up Taiwan's water reservoirs, like June through September are dumping water into them. And so even though now we're seeing some rain pick up in Taiwan in kind of recent weeks, it's not nearly enough to make up for that deficit or to meet current demand. And then we're also seeing this increased need for semiconductors because of more demand for a lot of different goods like cars, computers, TVs. Semiconductors are really in a lot of different things. They all need these chips. And then so while all that's happening, you know, COVID, the pandemic really disrupted manufacturing supply chains. So lockdowns and other protective policy measures really disrupted supply chains being able to get the necessary materials. So we have this water shortage, increased demand, and then also supply shortage.
It's a confluence of factors that quite honestly, not a lot of people talk about. I think when I put something out, a Bluefield perspective about sort of Texas, and you start thinking about all the different aspects of a supply chain, or just, you know, everything from whatever's on the dining room table and the food all the way to, you know, all the manufactured components, water plays a role in basically all of it. And so while you may be a manufacturer of a piece of equipment, that doesn't mean that your supply chain is not. So semiconductors, so you've sort of led us to the water piece, and now we're talking about semiconductors in Taiwan. So what is the water footprint for semiconductors, or what role does water play in the process?
Yeah, so total shipments of semiconductors are actually increasing. So that, you know, will increase just the total water footprint overall of the industry, but then also the amount of water per unit is also trending up as well. So as semiconductor wafers are becoming more complex and we're able to put more layers on top of each other, the water footprint will continue to increase. In the production process, water is used to improve the resolution of ultraviolet light, which is used for etching on the wafers, so engraving onto them. But then it's also used for cleaning of the wafers and for cooling the machinery. And then overall, the industry uses about 2 to 9 million gallons of water per day.
To interject for a second, that's just the manufacturing process in and of itself. That probably doesn't even include, or maybe it does, the cooling of the facility and the other water needs that any facility might have, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And so then the Taiwan government has promised that they have enough water to provide these chip making facilities with enough water through May. We just started April, so May is right around the corner. So given the shutoffs on water supply, we're seeing manufacturing companies like TSMC and Micron have started trucking in their own water to supplement these supplies on site. But that can be pretty costly. TSMC has spent $30 million already on trucking. And then manufacturers are also developing these plans of being able to store up to 2 days worth of water on site, which is effective for addressing kind of acute water shortages, but this kind of long-term problem that's really sort of just a Band-Aid. But I do think TSMC is kind of on the right track with taking a more proactive approach to this water sustainability issue. So in 2016, they started working to improve on-site water purification and recycling efforts, which would reduce their dependence on municipal and groundwater sources. So some of TSMC's facilities are now recycling 90% of their industrial wastewater.
Yeah, I think it's kind of crazy, the thought of spending, you know, I know we came across that number, $30 million for trucking in waste. That is crazy, the thought of for an industrial process to truck in water. I mean, it happens in hydraulic fracturing, but I mean, there has been a move towards pipelines and other ways of transporting the water. It's just super costly. It's also drivers on the roads. I mean, there are a number of factors that are an issue, but just from a water management, also just climate perspective. And I think that's one of the things that got you interested in this, is this a new normal? But yeah, I'd say what you're telling me is obviously supply chains are at increasing risk to climate. And I don't know, you have other examples as well.
Yeah, definitely. Taiwan is a really interesting example, but it's by no means the only one or unique. So even in the United States, Samsung has a manufacturing facility in Austin, Texas, that was forced to cease operations back in February, as you'll recall, the rolling electricity blackouts that were happening due to another type of climate event of snow and extreme cold. And then further south on the coast in Texas, PVC suppliers are just now catching up from the shutdowns that they had to do earlier this year. And now Texas is an interesting example too, because their hurricane season is just around the corner. So they're kind of bookended by extreme weather. So this really is kind of becoming a new normal that industrial players need to not just respond to, but prepare for.
Yeah, I think everybody's sort of forgotten about it. And maybe even last year, I don't think the hurricane feels so long ago, but even last summer and fall, it didn't seem like the hurricane season was really as bad as it could have been, should I say, given that everybody was quarantined. And I know there were some instances where there are problems, I believe, in Louisiana. But, you know, on a whole, I don't believe it was as bad to that point. And I think we've shown the state of Bluefield a number of times. But I was just looking at some climate data from NOAA, and they basically, you know, I think there have been 285 events exceeding $1 billion for cost of repair since 1980, I believe is what that start date was. But it seems to be trending upward. And then you're right, it's not just drought, it's wildfires, it's freeze outs, and so on and so forth. So I guess, broadly speaking, and stepping back, you know, what should we be thinking about when we think about Taiwan semiconductors and supply chains, really?
Yeah, so I think living through this pandemic, COVID has kind of reminded us that a heavy reliance on a single location for a supply chain is really risky. And now we're learning that as well with climate change. And then TSMC, I think, is a good example of demonstrating the value of on-site water management and tackling this water supply chain problem. So increasing water efficiency, so it's just less of an input for your manufacturing processes, and also on-site treatment and reuse. So your facilities are less dependent on municipal water supplies, which they might have to shut off.
Yeah, I think from the outset of the pandemic, so a year ago, there was more discussion. I haven't heard as much about it recently, but that was exactly that thing that was being called, you know, China plus one. There was this heavy reliance on China for manufacturing, for equipment and supplies. You know, the discussion then was, oh, you know, they're quarantining, therefore supply chains are breaking down, well, there needs to be some diversification. And I think for the water sector, diversification is a good thing. My general attitude, and I think this is Bluefields as a whole, is that, you know, new development, new facilities means, you know, greenfield facilities means a bigger opportunity and more focus on things like water management. I mean, just not all that long ago, you did some research on Tesla specifically, and that was a good example of there's a new facility in outside of Austin, the new Gigafactory. There's an agreement with H2O Innovation to help manage the water. And so there are just going to be more and more opportunities as supply chains evolve. To your other point, climate is ultimately could be a deciding factor on just where companies decide to either not only locate their facilities, but they also may exit certain locations because of it if they can't get a reliable supply of water or wastewater treatment to meet their ongoing operations. So with that, Cullen, what final takeaways when you look at the supply chain as a whole or just the market in general, what you see happening when it comes to climate?
Yeah, so I think when looking at this concept of corporate sustainability and ESG targets going forward, a lot of that's been focused on more on emissions and that sort of thing. But I think water really needs to and is beginning to take on a greater importance in these conversations, especially in the U.S. You know, we were talking about Taiwan, but the U.S. has its own issues in the West, particularly going through extreme drought right now. And we have a lot of important manufacturing facilities that are sited in these regions. So we talked about the electric vehicle market, which is in Nevada and Texas and Arizona now. A lot of the food and beverage industry is located in California. So drought could really disrupt a lot of our key industrial verticals. And then I think climate change as a whole is a really disrupting force for water and supply chain. So industries and companies that maybe historically haven't had to think about water as a scarce resource. You know, they think that there's always going to be all the water they need, are increasingly seeing that they do need to think about that as a scarce resource.
Yeah, I think, you know, one thing, and I read this somewhere else, and so I'm not going to take credit for it, but someone raised a good point, and that is, you know, when it comes to climate, there's historically for ESG targets, and with good reason, there's been a focus on carbon emissions in that end of the equation, which is the right thing to do because it ultimately solves the problem or hopes to. But one thing is, you know, you can run a manufacturing facility, you can spew as much carbon into the air as possible in your facility, and your facility still runs. But if you don't have any water, you're kind of out of luck, right? I mean, we saw that in Texas, you know, wellheads are frozen, gas pipelines are frozen, even in some cases, power generation was curtailed, and then municipal water supply systems froze. There were main breaks and then homes froze. So my point is, you know, you can run a carbon emitting facility and you're still fine. But if you don't have water, that may actually be a bigger concern in the near term, because that is really an acute issue. Carbon emissions are more of a long-term problem. All right. Well, Cullen, that was quick and dirty. So I really appreciate you stepping up, and, with that, I guess we should sign out and we will catch up later. So thanks again for joining.
Yeah, pleasure to be here. Thanks.
All right. So for everybody else who's listening, before we sign off, please, please, please subscribe and give us a rating. You can do that on Apple Podcasts. You can't do it on Spotify, but you can always separately reach out to us, send us a note to waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com with any topic ideas or even any comments you'd like to make. We're not doing this for ourselves. We're doing this for you. And lastly, tell a friend about it. There's no better time to do so because we're still in the middle of a pandemic. This podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by the one and only Bluefield Research. To learn more and hear more about us, read more about us, you can go to bluefieldresearch.com. We're always there, and there's stuff happening all the time. Thanks again. Take care. Be safe.